down here, wasting all my time. Cause when you're standing oh so near, I kinda lose my mind.
Yeah.
It's not the book you got to wear.
See, I said I was gonna be playing Cars songs.
Oh, is that, you know, I knew you'd slip that one in. I said, it's not that the song's about a car, but the girl's got a steering wheel on the cover.
Yeah,
so.
But see, if I said, what was that, Candio?
Yes, Candio.
Yeah. Yeah, see, the problem is if I played Beach Boys 409 from 64,
yeah,
our next guest would say, oh, hey, Boomer.
Yeah.
So I tried to play something a little more timely. It is my pleasure to welcome the object of the mini Vito Sununu movement going on, the governor, Chris Sununu. Morning, governor.
Good morning. Hey, I Rick Ocasek in the morning. Can't go wrong. Cannot
okay,
go wrong.
Thank you. Thank you
very much. Score.
See? Yeah. See? That's good.
Did
so,
he pass away? Did Rick?
Yes.
Rick Ocasek did, right?
Yes, he did.
I couldn't remember. His wife, Paulina Poroshkova, I think is still around, but I think she passed away.
Yep, Rick passed away.
And he cut her out of the will and left her nothing, so she's not happy.
Is that really true?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, no, it's true.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I'll just remember them as the 1980s very awkward Boston power couple, right?
Yes. They were like, seriously, she's with him? Yeah, I know. Exactly.
So, I'm sorry to bring up such bad news on a variety of levels. My bad.
Hey, it's okay. The music still lives.
No, good to have you here. And, you know, I've been looking at the news coming out and again, this whole, you know, Vito Sununu. And I'm going, God, you guys really have nothing, do you?
What is that? I don't know what that Vito, I got to be honest. Is that a Democrat Party thing?
Yeah, it's a Democratic Party.
Oh, yeah. They're trying to get this kicked off,
and it's like, it doesn't have legs.
I know.
Well, if they need a red pen, I'm happy to donate as many as they want. They can try all they like, but I just don't think it's going to fly. I don't know what to tell you.
No, they were screaming that because you vetoed the $15 minimum wage, you crippled Manchester and businesses.
You've taken life away from living wage for families.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, the state with the lowest poverty rate in the country, with some of the highest average household wages in the country, you know, not that nobody makes minimum wage, but it's something like 0.3% of people make minimum wage. And even of those individuals, it's only for about 6 months. It's kind of that starting wage for, you know, entry-level high school kids or something like that. So it's extremely, extremely rare that anybody truly makes minimum wage in the state because our economy is so strong. Now, you want to bring the economy to a grinding halt, you drive that minimum wage to $15 an hour, and everything changes within a company structure. For some reason, Democrats think that there's just always another dollar ready to go. But at the end of the day, either someone's going to get fired, hours are going to be cut, something has to give on the payroll when you double, you know, because it's not just about those making $7 to 15 or $8 to 15, whatever it is. It's about those making 12 now go to 20, right? And look, that's fine, but it has to happen naturally. A good capitalistic economic system engine, we're the model of doing that really, really well. And when the model works, why would you throw a wrench in it just for political reasons? And what's going to happen is what happened in San Francisco or Missouri or Seattle.
Yep.
You know, people can't afford to live in their cities anymore. They get fired. Their hours are cut. They don't make as much money at the end of the day. And it's those folks at the lowest end that they're quote unquote trying to help that actually end up getting the short end of the stick.
And what percentage of our businesses are small businesses that cannot afford to crank it up to $15 an hour?
Two years ago, I'm in Exeter, right? Fairly liberal, a small city of Exeter. I live nearby. Great, great town, though. I'm in a really great town, and I'm talking to the chamber. And there was a woman who ran a flower shop there. I think it was a flower shop. And someone asked me about the minimum wage, and we got to raise the minimum wage. And then a young business owner in the back said, Governor, I'm a Democrat, but I can't tell you how frustrated I am that, you know, my fellow Democrats can't read income statements, can't read balance sheets, and don't understand that I would have to fire one of my three staff if you raise the minimum wage, and my business would be crippled because of that.
Yep.
Please don't go to $15. So as much as the Democrat Party likes to push this issue, Republicans, Democrats, and independents across the board understand this is taking us in the wrong direction. We have a great economic model. We have an incredibly strong economy. Raising the minimum wage is just a political ploy that actually has a net negative benefit,
mm-hmm.
Net negative, if you will, when it comes down to it. So I'm not, you know, it's fine. It's obviously I think all the vetoes will be upheld today, and the Democrats could keep talking to themselves about veto Sununu or whatever it's about.
Well, like I said, it has no legs, and it's purely political. So, and speaking of Democrats, somebody we had on the air Monday morning was giving you props, a member of the task force to refire up New Hampshire, State Senator Kevin Kavanaugh. He said, man, I like the way that the way that we've done it. It's been a measured approach, and it's working.
It is. It is, because it's not just me. As an individual, we have a great team, and we have great individuals, and we manage, right? It isn't about just having a political talking points don't get you through a crisis, right? You can't sue your way through a crisis. You've got to manage. You got to know people and payrolls and budgets, implementation, purchasing, you know, how are the value of your purchasing power, supply chain management. All of these things are what I kind of brought to the table, and I have a team around me that understands these concepts, understands the science behind what we do, and by putting all of those puzzle pieces on the table, we've been able to craft a path here that's, I got to be honest, pretty awesome. I mean, it really is. As tough of a time as we've had to go through, compared to everybody else, we're still in a really, really good position.
You know, I got to tell you, it was kind of the reason for being together was somber. But seeing you and your dad giving speeches at the memorial service for former Governor Merrill, pretty cool, and you did a nice job.
Thank you. You know, we kind of strung that together. It was a little bit, you know, last minute, obviously, because, you know, Steve unfortunately had passed away over the weekend, and we talked to the family, and we asked them, if, you know, with their permission, if we could do something, and they wanted to participate, so that was great. And then, you know, Steve had a real core group of friends that he surrounded himself with, and Governor Merrill was phenomenal. He defined the New Hampshire advantage. He knew how to talk to people at a very one-on-one, localized level and really hear them and understand what was driving them and their concerns, and then turning that into something real for them, you know, through the governor's office and working with the legislature. And he was an awesome example of public service. And, you know, he never wanted to be a career politician. He just loved and wanted to help the state. And, it was a beautiful day. Kind of put it together last minute, but man, it really went off very, very well.
Well, and Kelly's comments were great, and former Governor Benson, not as a gifted orator like you, not as quick on as his feet, but when he wrapped it up by saying, Steve, you left us wanting for more. I went, wow, well written.
That was great.
Benson was great, and Justice Broderick, John Broderick, up and closed it out, and he is a great orator. And, you know, he's got, if you ever want to just, you know, have a beer with somebody and have a soda and listen to great New Hampshire stories, Justice Broderick is the guy. He's just phenomenal. And it was just, we were honored to have him kind of close things out for us. And so it was nice. It was a really nice, we kept it to an hour. I think someone told me WMUR ran it live, which was, I think, a nice tribute as well. And that allowed, I think, a lot of folks in the state to really appreciate, you know, what this guy had given, what his family had given, frankly, to the state. And remember what good public service is all about, as opposed to all the national craziness that you see out there today.
Yeah. Speaking of craziness, and go back to my original point about vetoes, you've got the lawmakers down at UNH today, the House, going to try to overturn your vetoes. Are you concerned?
No.
Okay.
No, not really. Look,
okay,
I vetoed the bills. I mean, so many of these bills that they're discussing today are bills that never even had a public discussion in public hearing. So a lot of it, I mean, because the legislature went away.
Right.
So a lot of what I vetoed was, well, look, this might be good, this might not be good, but I got to tell you, the public hasn't had input on. Even the legislature really didn't have time to go back and work some of the kinks out. And so that's, in many cases, that's why a lot of the vetoes happen, And I think the legislature of all wants to have a say, as they should. You know, they're the representatives of the people. You should be passing bills without a voice of the people on them. And so I think for the most part, I think they'll be upheld. And, I mean, if some of them aren't, they aren't. That's the process. It's fine. I might not like it, but that's okay. A lot of things happen in government that I don't necessarily agree with. Checks and balances. It works. There's a process. But I think at the end of the day, they'll all be upheld. That's my guess.
You wear that veto thing like a badge of honor, don't you?
I got to be honest. No. I mean, the only one maybe, you know, the only veto I really enjoyed was the income tax, right? Feltes wrote the income tax. I vetoed it. He wrote it again. I vetoed it again.
Right.
Because there's nothing more damaging to the essence of New Hampshire than big government broad-based taxes. Now, a lot of the other vetoes, they weren't slam dunks.
Right.
A lot of them we had to kind of hem and haw. But at the end of the day, I'm more than happy to step up and make the tough call.
Yeah.
And if people want to criticize, that's fine. I got big shoulders.
Yep.
I can handle it. But you got to do what's right, not by Chris Sununu and not just right by the Republican Party. You got to do what's right by New Hampshire. And you got to put, my job is to look out for 1.35 million people and put their interests first. And sometimes these bills might make great sense for the North Country, but terrible idea for the southern part of the state, or great sense for a certain business sector, but really bad for health care, or something like that.
Right.
So you've got to weigh the pros and cons of every bill. And you know, I think we did I got to be honest, I've never vetoed a bill that I regret it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't. I think that the folks of the state have stood up and said, yeah, we agree. You know, think of it this way. All of those bills I vetoed, no governor had ever had them cross his desk in history, right? That's how aggressive this very radical leftist legislation was. They were pulling, you know, ideas out of the national Democrat playbook.
Ugh.
They were putting those on our desk, and that's not what New Hampshire's about.
No,
so,
it isn't.
You know,
no,
happy to make the tough calls, veto them, and move on and get back to just good management in the state.
All right, we go. And good news out of employment, because the numbers from August, we're getting a little bit better, a little at a time.
Yeah, August numbers were down to about 6.5%. Our internal numbers have us down to about 5.5% unemployment in September already. So
nice.
We're just on a good track, and our numbers are dropping about twice the rate of the national average right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's a really good thing.
That's
all right, Chris, last question for you. I need your help on this one. I'm supposed to I'm supposed to be going to New Mexico first week of December. Do you think we're still going to have the 14-day quarantine when I come back?
Why are you going to New Mexico? What's in New Mexico? Do you have family out there?
No, I'm going elk hunting. We don't have elk in
elk
New Hampshire.
Here. Yeah.
If I brought some elk here, would you stay here?
Yes. Yes, but I will tell you.
So now the next question,
you go back,
does the elk have to quarantine?
If you go back to the 40s, New Hampshire did have an elk herd, but it didn't work out well for New Hampshire. So anyway, I have to fly to New Mexico, and they're waiving the 14-day quarantine when I go into the state if I go directly to the hunting camp. But is it going to be, do you think it's still going to be in place when I come back?
Yeah, I think it is. I think I'll be driving by your house waving at you in the window.
Okay.
While you're
all right. Okay.
Look, we've made exceptions for essential workers and things of that nature. But I got to be honest, I could go check the list. I don't think hunting recreational excursions are on the essential list.
I don't think it's essential.
I don't think you
even have to check.
So, all right.
I don't know what to tell you. Look, my father was a great public servant, and he taught me something really direct. Everyone has to play by the same rules. Everyone's got to play by the same rules. And that's what the legislature's for. If you don't like the rules, you can try to pass a law and change the rules. But there's a process to that. And so everyone's got to follow the rules. And as much as I'd love to help you out.
I don't really.
You're going elk hunting in New Mexico? We should talk about that offline. I don't know.
All right. I'll talk to you later about it. But thank you. Governor, always.
Save the money and do an expansion on your house. Why don't you fix up that bathroom you've been looking to fix up?
After that grim news you just gave me, I probably will stay at home and spend money on the house.
Yeah. Clean the garage. Isn't someone telling me to clean the garage?
There you go.
Valley's always telling me to clean the garage.
God, you sound like my mother. Thank you, Governor. Always a pleasure. Stay well, my friend.
You too. Be safe,
all
everybody.
Right.
Be good.
Nice. Governor Chris Sununu.
I love talking
that might have nixed my.
Yeah, I know.
I know,
because you got.
Well, I didn't know if he had an idea how long it might stay in place, if they're going to, you know.
Well, good for him for not speculating, though. Because you don't want to go on record going, but you told Peter.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I told Peter I'll be driving by his house waving while he's quarantining. Yeah, thanks, Governor. There's something to look forward to.
Oh, yeah.
9:24 is the time.
That's
okay.
Great.
Now let's take a break.
Let's take a break.
Warm up the coffee, and believe it or not.
Oh, yes, I will.
Pat and I checked before we talked to the governor. We looked at our contract, small type. Yes, we aren't. We're on till 10.
Okay.
So we'll
be back. Can't be done after the governor? We'll be back.
We'll be back.